1969, our own beach community of Venice, California, was shocked by a string of brutal murders. The man who committed these crimes, Russ Thorne, is the subject of a...
Hey, it's not how big your mouth is, it's what's in it that counts.
Oh, Baker, you were beating off boys in the fifth grade.
I was not, you creep.
Well, I don't know, Coach. My little sister did hear some screaming. But it seems perfectly quiet now.
Maybe we should split up. One of us will make it, even if the other one doesn't.
All of you are very pretty. I love you. It takes a lot of love for a person to do this.
Hi, it's Kimberly back from Friday the 13th, Part 4. And you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 103. And this time, it's all driller, no filler. Well, maybe a bit of filler. We'll see.
I was just thinking back to last week's episode where you came last in the podcast, in the quiz. Sorry. Continue, sorry.
Yeah, but you lost as well, Eric. But we're not going to dredge up old ancient history,
came second.
Are we? We're not going to dredge up ancient history like...
No. Sorry, I just... Entry. Sometimes I just uncontrollable laughter when I think about it. Sorry.
Okay, well, that's okay. Well, that's your business, Eric. But thank you. Well, we'll come on to Eric in a second. But just to let you know that we will be covering Nathan's pick of the Slumber Party Massacres. So, Nathan, are you very excited to be covering this finally?
I'm really excited.
But you're very sleepy as well, aren't you? Because we're recording this at another stupidly early time.
That too.
So it's slightly, well, probably fitting that recording Slumber Party Massacre, at least two of us, maybe three of us, are sleep deprived. So it's going to be one of those shows, I imagine. But apart from that, Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
Yeah, good. And Joseph, how about you? How are you doing?
I love you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I'll take that as it comes. And
it takes a lot of love to do this podcast.
It does indeed. It does indeed. And Eric, how's your organ?
I've got a jingle for every piece of information I'm going to impart on you today, so I'm doing good. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. And the love beads are going.
Yeah.
It is going to be one of those shows. But Eric, so that sounds very 80s, your organ.
Yeah, it does.
Is that on purpose?
Well, obviously.
Well, obviously.
This is my 80s organ, baby.
That's not going to get annoying at all, is it?
No.
Good. Okay. Well, yes, we're going to come to that. I'm a little bit sleep deprived because I was at a wedding last night on a boat in the middle of the Solent, the wedding reception, which was quite good fun. But it went on to about midnight and they get home to about 1. But I did post on Facebook and made me chuckle that Stuart's mother is a little bit hard of hearing now. And I don't know if you saw that. She asked this man, she said, "Oh, what do you do now?" And he said, "Oh, I'm an author." And she kind of looked at him and went, "Oh, that's very sad." And he looked very confused. And he said, "No, I'm an author." And she said, "Oh, sorry, I thought you said you're an orphan." It would be quite a strange remark for a 55-year-old man to make anyway. But that wasn't the... And then there was lots of... when we were in the back of the car on the way to the wedding, she kept on going, no, stick it in there, not here. No, stick it in my slot. No, this one, up that way. I think it was like... So I was sitting on the front like Finbar Saunders.
Yeah, totally.
She was trying to put a seatbelt on.
Right.
So, but yeah, there was almost a fight. So, I mean, what kind of wedding would it be without... it wasn't quite a fight, but apparently... There was some kind of long-running feud going, and I got cornered by a fat woman with a large pint of beer telling me about how some other fat women are called a racist. So anyway, it was one of those kind of parties.
Great fun.
Great fun,
oh, you yes. Brits and your weird humour.
Well, there you go. So, we're actually recording, again, in the kind of the time travel kind of way that we do these things. We're recording a week... early for recording. We're releasing this in a week's time, so because of the summer holidays coming up, we're going to try and keep on schedule to get to, something out to you every 2 weeks. So we haven't probably had a chance to watch a lot, but Eric, have you seen anything since the last show?
Here is my recently seen for this week. Yeah,
Yes, I saw actually something really, really, really good, and I highly recommend it to everyone. It's a documentary called Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau. This is made by David Gregory of Seven Films, and it's this wonderfully entertaining and, you know, quite astonishing warts and all account of the behind-the-scenes story of Richard Stanley's attempt to bring the H.G. Wells novel Island Dr. Moreau to the screens in the mid-90s. And, I mean, we all know it was a trouble-plagued production. Richard Stanley himself was kicked off set after 3 or 4 days of filming and was replaced by John Frankenheimer. But you get all these really odd stories. Like, at the start, Richard Stanley admits that he got a friend in London to perform some kind of witchcraft ritual to make sure that he landed the gig when it looked like, you know, it might be slipping through his fingers. The people who come out of it worst of all are Val Kilmer and Marlon Brando. They're the true villains of the piece because they completely sabotage the film with their sort of demands and their eccentric behavior. And not even a veteran director like John Frankenheimer could control them, apparently. Brando had a bit of an excuse because his daughter just prior to this had committed suicide. So he was, a bit nutty, I suppose. I mean, he always has a reputation of being a bit difficult, but I think that sort of kind of pushed him over the edge, which is why it's his suggestion that he appears in the film, you know, painted white and with a veil over him, which sounds kind of like a night out with Justin. But but he also came up with weird ideas like putting a ice bucket on his head and getting Firouza Balk, is that her name, to, you know, chuck ice into it every so often during the film. Apparently Richard Stanley hung around Australia even after he was fired, which is where they're filming the film, and he came back on set disguised as an extra because, as you know, Island of Dr. Moreau is about a doctor who's doing genetic experiments, you know, mutating animals and humans. So he came back on sort of disguised as this dog-like creature so he could see exactly what was going on.
Toya.
Sorry, I was just thinking about that time. Somebody told me this story about someone who went to the cinema and they wore sunglasses instead of 3D glasses.
I imagine you have a jingle for that, don't you?
Yeah, I probably do. Let me see if I have one in my jingle bank. Ooh, ooh, the person who wore the sunglasses was stupid.
Well, thank you, Vince Clark. Yeah. You got anything else for us?
No, but all I will say is that this film is highly recommended. It actually has the effect of making you want to go out and watch. Oh, sorry, am I boring somebody?
We're very tired, Eric.
Yes. Okay, well, I'll just finish up by saying that it has the odd effect of making you actually want to go out and watch The Island of Dr. Moreau again. Even though I don't remember it as being a terribly awful film, I just remember it being a bit bland.
I've never seen it, but I have seen Hardware, and Richard Stanley directed some goth videos, didn't he, for Fields of the Nephilim way back in the day. So I'm one of those.
That'd be your cup of tea, not mine.
Yeah, no, fair enough. So, anything else, Eric?
No, that's it.
Okay, well, thank you. Nathan, how about you?
I watched The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It was amazing. And then I watched Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which I really, really, really love as well.
Which version?
Which version?
The 70s.
Oh, yeah, I love that one.
It's a really, really good movie, and Grant had never seen it.
Mm. It's very eerie.
Yes. Mm. Yes, it really is. I love how it's kind of a slow build when the pod people are taking over.
Yeah, it's quite that last shot in the film's kind of always kind of haunted me.
Yes. Although they gave it away on the posters.
Yeah. Yeah, they did rather, but
it's very iconic. Final shot, I'd say.
And also, they always remember the dog with the human face when the pods got mixed up.
And they try the genetic mistake.
Yeah, no, that's a film I haven't seen for a while, but it's always stayed with me, so I'll have to catch that at some point.
I've never seen the original, the 50s version.
Yeah, is it Kevin McCarthy?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a cameo in the 70s version, but I haven't seen the original.
It's really good. It's good. I mean, it's not, it's of its time, you know, as the 70s one's quite, you know, of its time. I haven't seen the Abel Ferrara one.
Oh, it's quite good.
Is it?
And then there's a more recent one with, what's her name? Nicole Kidman in it. That was a troubled production, a la Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, is that Invasion?
They did one in the 90s, a variation with Gabrielle Anwar.
That's the Abel Ferreira one.
Mm. Oh, okay. I didn't see that. No.
Mm. Okay, cool. All right. Thank you, Nathan. Did you say you had anything else?
Oh, no. Those were the only two I've seen.
Okay, thank you. Joseph, how about you?
Yeah, the only thing I've watched is Stung, which is the movie about the giant wasps. It's kind of a Tremors-type film, kind of a horror-like comedy. Boy, somebody's just really not interested this morning.
No. It's probably Nathan. He's the one
it's called getting 4 hours worth of sleep. That's what this is.
Why didn't you go to bed earlier? Yeah.
You should have went to bed at 6 o'clock yesterday.
Because here's the problem, because because we had agreed to do this podcast at a certain time until one member, who shall remain nameless, wanted to do it, you know, at an ungodly hour.
Well, excuse me for having adult responsibilities. Anyway, Stung is sort of a Tremors type film, light, you know, horror comedy, light comedy. It's about this, arrested adolescent who goes to this garden party to kind of help out. And the woman who throws the garden party has like this fertilizer. It's like illegal, and it seeps into these like wasp eggs, and basically turns the wasps into these giant 7 foot tall mutant wasps. It's pretty good. You know, obviously not as good as Tremors, but it has some amusing moments and some pretty good practical effects. Good kind of popcorn type film. I definitely recommend it on that level. I mean, you know, don't take it too seriously. It's you know, kind of, I guess you'd say, kind of Roger Corman-ish, but it's pretty good fun.
I've seen that trailered about a bit. I haven't seen it yet. It kind of looks like a. Is it better than a sci-fi?
Oh yeah, movie? much better. Yeah.
Okay, Nathan, have you seen Stung?
Never heard of it.
No. Okay. What about you, Eric? Have you seen Hung?
I've seen Hung. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you would.
Every time I look in the mirror. Provided I have my trousers off.
Wow, wow, Eric has a small pee-pee. Wow, wow. There's my organ. My big organ.
You're so cruising for a bruising.
Yeah, you are.
Oh, dear. This is the curtain is being drawn back, isn't it, on the internal battles of this theory continues.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it's like a dynasty catfight, isn't it? It's pulling off wigs and pearl necklaces flying everywhere in ponds.
That's seagulling, isn't it?
Well, yes, very possibly. So, okay, well, rattling through these at a pace. The only thing I've seen this week is another Irish film. There seems to be quite a lot of Irish horror films being made in recent years, but... I think we've probably discussed this before on the podcast, but is Stitches, the Ross Noble killer clown comedy, horror comedy. Ross Noble, unless he's probably not famous outside of the UK, but he is a British comedian, and it's a story of a kind of grumpy kind of clown who dies at an accident at a children's birthday party, and then he's basically brought back to life, a kind of like zombie kind of clown, to wreak revenge on the now teenagers at our party. It's very much played for laughs. It could have done with being a little bit darker, but it's got that kind of almost Sam Raimi-esque kind of gore comedy. Like, for instance, he pulls out the entrails of one teenager and makes a balloon animal out of his guts. And then blows one kid's head up with a bicycle pump or a balloon pump, so his head gets bigger and bigger until it explodes. It was quite good fun. I thought it was quite funny, especially when he's trying to chase the teenagers. They're on bicycles and he's on a little kid's tricycle and going up a hill. But who's seen that?
I have.
Okay.
I haven't.
Oh, haven't you?
No.
Oh, well.
I don't know. It didn't come with the greatest of reviews, and clowns just don't interest me. So,
clowns never laughed before. Beanstalks never grew.
I'll try. Eric's got a jingle for that. So, what did you guys think of Stitches? Did it?
I like the horror aspect. I thought it was really well done. Some of the comedy really doesn't work. I did like the tricycle bit, him going up the hill. I like how he's, even, you know, after death, he's kind of a sad sack, kind of a drunk loser. But it's pretty good, I guess.
What about you, Nathan?
It wasn't boring, so I liked it.
Okay, well, that's a fair assessment. I mean, I thought it was it very much had the feeling of as if it was riffing, if not kind of blatantly copying, kind of Legal Gentlemen, that type of humour. So it's worth a watch, but it's very much kind of it's kind of weird mixture of like real teenage horror movie, as in like, you know, new kind of teenage kind of twist on horror movies, and a kind of dark comedy. It doesn't quite, it's almost like The Inbetweeners with a killer clown, if that makes sense. But it's worth a watch. The other thing,
Justin, before you go any further, I just I forgot to mention, I actually got caught up on the Scream series kind of begrudgingly. I still didn't really care for the second episode, but by the third episode, I'm actually finding myself enjoying it a little bit. I especially like the, I don't know if you've seen the third episode, but I'll just say the choose moment. I really liked that.
The which moment? Oh, the choose moment.
The choose, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought it was the third episode it's kind of settled into a bit of a groove, isn't it? It's not as frenetic. Yeah.
It's starting to get its legs, I guess, as it were.
I like the, it actually had some suspense this time as well, didn't it?
Pretty good at suspense, I'd say. Yeah,
that last half of the episode was kind of very, quite tense. It'd be interesting to see if they can keep, you know, if they're killing off the cast at this rate, it's going to be difficult to see how they can get to 10 episodes with anyone left, or anyone left as a suspect, for that matter. But yeah, what about Nathan? Have you caught up with it yet?
No, I've only seen the first episode.
Okay. Well, it's definitely worth catching up with it. I agree with Joseph. It's definitely finding its legs. And I know, Eric, you're not.
No, you know, I haven't seen a millisecond of it, I'm afraid.
Are you going to watch Scream Queens?
I might watch that one, and I might watch the Evil Dead one. Mm. But yeah. They'll need to impress me in their first episode.
I'm going to watch both. Definitely The Evil Dead. Scream Queens just for Jamie Lee Curtis, because it's kind of neat to see her in a horror movie TV show.
Hmm. But when's that coming out? Is that on?
Is it September, I think?
Oh, it's not. It's not for a while.
It maybe around Halloween. I'm not sure, but I know The Evil Dead debuts on Halloween. So,
Well, it'll be interesting to see if Scream Queens kind of does. Well, actually, Scream has done pretty well, hasn't it, I think? Or I don't know if it was rumoured to. I think we spoke last time about it getting a second season already based on the viewing figures. But
apparently, the first episode, apparently it did really poorly. But by the second episode, the numbers just shot up big time. So they ordered a second season.
Yeah, well, apparently it was interesting, because it was, they say, when the traditional viewing figures were quite poor for the first episode, but when they took into account streaming and people watching it on YouTube and things like that, the viewing figures, because they put the first episode on YouTube for free, and the viewing figures went through the roof. So yeah, it's interesting, you know, way of doing things. But yeah, okay, well, that's all good. So I got a feeling this may be a relatively lean episode, because we're probably not gonna have much feedback, although we might have a little bit. Did you send some feedback, Joseph?
Yes, check your Facebook. I sent to all three of you.
Yes, okay. We got some.
Okay, and we've also got we asked for people's opinions on Slum Party Massacre on the Facebook page, so we'll get to those as well. But before we do that, we're going to talk about the film. Well, Nathan's going to bring us in on the film, aren't you, Nathan, after this trailer. So here's the trailer for Slumber Party Massacre.
The basketball team is planning a party. A slumber party to bare their souls.
No, your tits are getting bigger.
Mine? All the girls are coming, except Mary and Linda. And they won't be missed. The party begins at 8 o'clock. It's a slumber party for old time's sake.
Yeah. Love it too. Do you think I'm getting better?
But be on the lookout for an uninvited guest.
Please.
When the pizza arrives, things really start jumping. Some people may have to leave early, but others will hang around and hang around.
Courtney, you're underage. Negative. Just go.
You're not going to
eat the dead guy's pizza.
I feel better already. Really, I do.
But for those who stay, there'll be plenty of surprises. And non-stop action. For sure, no one's getting any sleep the night of the Slumber Party Massacre. Close your eyes for a second and sleep forever.
That's a scary trailer. Okay, so a group of teenage girls who are women's NBA hopefuls decide to have a slumber party for old time's sake. And a driller killer shows up and drills them to death. This movie isn't very, I guess, huge on plot. It's kind of lean, so there's not really a lot of plot description to give. And that's one reason I love this movie. I mean, slasher movies don't really have to have, like, a convoluted plot. This, along with Alice, Sweet Alice, are the first movies I ever saw. I watched them back-to-back, and the thing is, my memory doesn't recall which one I watched first, but I know I watched them on the same night, so I always say they were both the first horror movie I ever saw. So it always holds a special place in my heart. I love this movie. I think the music, I love the music. It's very 80s. And I love the chase scene with Brink Stevens in the school. I thought that's probably one of my favorite chase scenes in a slasher movie. I thought they did a really good job with that. I thought the characters were likable. You know, I didn't think that, you know, I mean, I even loved the bitchy character, Diane. You know, she's kind of the bitch of the group, but I still loved her regardless. I kind of like the fact that it's not a whodunit. It's very obvious from the beginning who the murderer is. It's only 77 minutes, so I mean, it's a really short runtime. It seems to go by really quickly when I watch it. It seems like it's over in a flash, I'd say. I love the character of Jackie, who decides during the middle of the massacre that she wants to eat some pizza. And eat pizza that a dead delivery guy has delivered, which is, it's kind of gross. But, you know, I mean, she says in the movie, you know, eating makes her feel best. So, you know, hopefully that pizza cheered her up before she went and got killed. But I love the fact that at the end, you know, you kind of have three final girls instead of one. I mean, you've kind of got three of them battling the killer at the end, and I thought that was a fun change of pace. So, I mean, it's definitely one of my favorite movies of all time. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed it. I saw it many years ago when it was titled Slumber Party Murders in the on video in the UK, because you couldn't have the word massacre on a video box, so that shows how far we've come. But and I think it was very much cut. I really enjoyed it. I've always enjoyed it. It's kind of, I think it's a bit of a strange beast, because we'll get into, when we get to background, it's funny, isn't it? It's humorous, and I think when it was released, it was described as a teenage shocker laugher, so like a basic horror comedy. But it was written supposedly as a parody and filmed straight. So it gives it a kind of slightly odd kind of feel to it, in so much that everyone's playing it straight. But there's this kind of the intent behind it, although it's been diluted as a parody. It's almost like the perfect kind of end to the early 80s slashers in some way, isn't it? It hasn't descended into low production values and that out and out spoofing, but it's kind of gentle nudging to all the conventions of the slasher movie, and the characters are pretty likable, and I did enjoy all the kind of very inane teen dialogue all the way through it, and it also has props for choosing one of the shortest killers in slasher movie history, apart from I think only maybe Leprechaun was shorter. It's kind of interesting. I think it'd be interesting when we talk about the background and also what the intent was, because again, you know, we talk about who actually wrote and directed the film. As people probably know, it was written and directed by women, but under the guy, well, but guided, if that's the right term, by kind of Roger Corman. So it was for a so-called, in inverted commas, feminist slasher movie. There's an awful lot of sort of female flesh on show, isn't there? Lots of soaping buttocks and boobies, and not just in the opening shower scene, but throughout, liberally sprinkled throughout the film. There's lots of nudity, all of the female, type. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's again, it's a little bit like, for me, I've seen it so many times now, it's a bit like putting on an old pair of slippers. There's no surprises there really, apart from the emasculation of the killer by chopping off his drill bit at the end, which like a lot of obviously been read into. It's a kind of film I can throw on, and it's I know it so well that I know all its kind of skips and beats basically. It's a fun movie. It's a kind of pizza slasher movie pizza, isn't it? It's fun. And you enjoy it at the time, but when it's over, it's not something that necessarily sticks in the head. It's kind of like it's a fast food slasher movie, and that's not an insult. It's kind of just shows how enjoyable it is. So that's my tuppence.
Can see where you're coming from. Although, I mean, for me, I know this movie from beginning to end, but that's only because I've seen it, I don't know, 100 times. What about you, Eric?
Here are my thoughts about Slumber Party Massacre Part 1, oh baby. Okay, well, I am not that well-versed with Slumber Party Massacre. It's not one that I would know inside out. I saw this only for the first time when it came out on DVD in about 1999 or 2000. And I don't remember being terribly impressed by it, but I have grown to love it. Actually, I think it is really, really, really good. I actually got the recent Blu-ray by Scream Factory, and the film looks amazing, actually. You can tell, as Justin was saying, it hadn't slumped into low production values at this stage. It looks, you know, pretty decent. Acting is great in it. It has fun, likable characters. Delivers the gore and all the required elements of a slasher. It has one big problem though for me, and that is the killer. And Justin mentions this in his review on Hysteria Lives. It's that I don't like. I mean, you mentioned this, Nathan, that you like the fact that the killer is, you know, up front, and you know who it is exactly, and you can see his face and all that. But you see, I don't like that in a slasher movie. I prefer the slasher to be a bit mysterious, to either be masked or to, you know, for his face to be hidden up until the end of the film. The fact that you can see his face just dilutes the suspense for me. And had he been, you know, it put a hockey mask on him, and this would have been a classic up there with, you know, the classics from 1981, like Happy Birthday to Me, My Bloody Valentine, The Prowler, all those. As it is, it's slightly tarnished by the fact that the killer is just this Joe Soap going around in double denim, killing people. But I mean, you were saying the 77-minute running time as well, which I think is a real plus. And a lot of, you know, slasher movies could benefit from being trimmed back a bit. I mean, this one is lean and mean, but it doesn't feel incomplete. Sometimes when a movie is 75 minutes, it feels like there's a huge chunk missing, or, you know, you don't feel, get satisfaction from it if it's too short. But in this case, it feels, you know, like a complete movie, and it runs by really briskly. The scenes I like, as you mentioned, when Brink Stevens is being stalked around the school to start, I think is a blisteringly good opening sequence to a film. Well, it's about 10 minutes in or so. And I think, you know, it sustains that throughout. The humor, I think, works really, really well, apart from that scene with the pizza. Because I think at that stage in the film, it's built up such momentum as a bona fide slasher movie that I think it slightly grinds to a halt for this joke about eating the pizza from, you know, the pizza box is, you know, perched on top of the back of the dead pizza delivery man. They're eating it off it, and it just seems out of character and out of place at that stage in the film. But I mean, the rest of the humor that's you know, up until that point, I'm fine with, and I think it works really, really well. You know, it's a really, really rewatchable movie, as you were saying, and it's on the cusp of being a slasher classic, if only, you know, it had a more memorable killer, in my opinion. What other standouts is there? It's got one of my favorite lines of dialogue. I didn't even realize they repeated in the trailer there until you played it, Justin. I think your tits are getting bigger. And then in all in unison, all these girls say, "What, mine?" Which I think is fantastic. Did anyone notice that as you say, it's got three final girls, which I think is a real interesting idea. And it would have, you know, I know in the sequel, one of them is carried over. It would have been nice to see all three. But does anyone notice that Valerie, the actress who plays Valerie, looks a lot like Ronnie Blakely from Nightmare on Elm Street, a slightly younger version and a better, you know, a better acting version of Ronnie Blakely? No?
No, I thought, yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I also thought what was quite funny early on is when Coach Jana goes back to her house and somebody's drilling a peephole through her front door. Mm-hmm. And then, like, she just walks off, leaving this hole in her door. She doesn't even complete the job. So poor old Coach Jana, I hope it isn't, you know, drafty in Los Angeles, because she's got just this hole in the front door. Anyone notice the reference to Friday the 13th Part 2 in there? There's a cat called Muffin. I think Coach Jana's cat is called Muffin. But no, overall, love the movie. I can't remember why my initial impressions were a bit low. I remember watching it for the first time and thinking, it was all right. 2015, my opinion has much changed. I do love it. It's definitely, it's up there with, hard to say what. I certainly would put it on a par with films like The Prowler, probably, and other 81 films that were, you know, bar My Bloody Valentine, Friday the 13th Part 2, Halloween 2. They're all classics. This is slightly below it. Again, put the killer in a mask, and I don't know, things could have changed. It could have been, you know, a 5-star movie. But I do love it, Nathan. You'll be glad to hear. Finally, we agree on something.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to agree on something. Joseph?
Yeah, I like it a lot, too. I think for the tone of the film, the killer actually works because they have this kind of, they're kind of paralleling the whole cheesy Lothario drives around in a van wearing denim, stalking girls, trying to get them into his van. And he looks like one of those playground types. So he kind of fits into this universe. I like Eric, I prefer the kind of whodunits where you have to guess who the killer is, but you know, for this film, it really works. And one thing I noticed on this watch that I haven't really paid attention to before is that they use a lot of, I guess you call them static shots for the girl drama and all that stuff. But whenever the killer's on screen, they kind of, you know, they get a little more fluid with the camera work, you know, zooming in and following him around. The one moment where he comes through the door, they have this really excellent kind of a dolly zoom in on him and then back out of him. I kind of like the contrast between just still imagery with the girls and then all this movement with him. There's definitely some kind of a comedic tone that you know, I think works a lot in its favor. I actually kind of like the pizza moment. The joke gets kind of dragged on a little too long. But I like the whole, "Well, I feel better now after she's eaten the pizza." I thought that was kind of humorous. Like I said, there's definitely some subtext here with them, you know, knocking the drill bit out of his hands and basically, you know, robbing him, stripping him of all his power. And that's how they're able to kind of, you know, I guess do him in, as it were. So yeah, I mean, I liked it a lot. It's lean and mean. It's 77 minutes long. It's never boring. Lots of great dialogue. I actually prefer the first sequel because of how zany it is. But as far as, you know, it's just a lean, mean slasher film, you know, this is, like Eric said, it's I wouldn't say top tier, but it's like second tier, you know, with like The Prowler and, you know, The Burning and all those movies. So, yeah, I mean, I'd definitely give it a big thumbs up.
The thing is about the pizza scene, I think one reason it works for me is because they play it so straight. Like, it's not jokey at all. Like, I mean, all three in the room at the time seemed very serious during the scene. Like, it's almost like it's not even played for laughs, but you kind of have to because of how absurd it is.
Yeah, the other scene, the scene I like that's comedic that works around the same stage of the film is where Valerie is running up the stairs with the buzzsaw, and she runs out of power cord and gets, you know, thrown backwards down the stairs, which again, as you say, it's not played for laughs. It's played straight by the actors, but it does raise a chuckle.
They did a variation of that in Brian De Palma's body double it was a drill in that film as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so I think they may have you know, aped that a little.
I did wonder the self-referential thing, because I mean, obviously there was all the Halloween copying, well, kind of not pastiche, but all the shots of the girls walking down the streets. It was very much like the streets of Haddonfield, wasn't it? The way it looked. But also, I did wonder if the the killer being Russ Thorne was supposed to be a kind of taken the name from Damien Thorne from the Omen, so like a more generalized kind of pastiche or kind of, you know, of parody of horror movies. It was curious, wasn't it? I wonder, I think it'd be interesting for us to talk about whether or not this is, do you think it's a feminist slasher movie?
Not really.
Yes.
I do because basically, like what I said, is this Russ Thorne character is basically this playground, you know, predator type who basically gets emasculated by these, you know, empowered women. I mean, I don't think it's trying to make a bold statement, but I think the subtext is definitely there.
Well, to me, it's like in the beginning, the women are playing basketball and the men are standing off to the side watching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like the men in the movie are useless. I mean, they don't really do anything. It's the women that like all fight the killer. I mean, all the men in the movie just seem to die pretty easily, I thought. Whereas the women actually put up a bigger fight.
That happens in a lot of slasher movies, though, I find. I don't think this is any exception, really.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, critically, these films get, you know, torn to shreds because, oh, it's just a woman cowering in a corner as a man stands over trying to kill her. But if you watch a lot of these films, you'll find that it's always a woman who survives. It's always a woman who, you know, fights back. Men are typically useless in these films. I think a lot of these films are kind of, I wouldn't say feminist, but they're definitely female empowered.
Yeah, I think it was interesting that the choice they went for the person who played the killer. The fact is, he's kind of like pint sized. You know, he's not. If he didn't have his drill, he wouldn't actually be that much of a threat, would he? So it was almost rather than having this kind of massive hulking Jason style character or kind of a silent. You know, he is thankfully like a silent killer, like Michael Myers, but. But and he kind of bugs his eyes out and everything. He doesn't look particularly threatening. And I wonder if that's because they chose him specifically because he was kind of like the rather than the hulking killer, he was like the creep. You know, the kind of typical kind of sleazy creep that might hassle women in real life.
He's definitely that predatory type. Basically, the drill is his dick, and that's how he, you know, that's where he gets his power from.
Well, I mean, even at the end, when he finally does speak to one of the characters, I mean, his whole speech is about how much he loves them and how much he knows they want what he's doing to them.
Yeah, it kind of almost uncomfortably borders on kind of the rape, I guess you call it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they were going for, too.
Yeah.
I think they were purposely going for, you know, that kind of, that kind of motive. Because Dustin said...
And I know Eric would say no. Sorry, Nathan. I know Eric would say no, but what about you other two? Would you let him rape you?
No.
What?
What a weird question.
That is a weird question.
I was just asking if you found him attractive.
Eric, surely there must be a jingle for that.
Here we go.
No, I don't want to be raped by Russ Thorne. Ooh, yeah.
I echo that sentiment. It's he's not exactly a dreamboat, is he?
No, he's not dreamy in any way.
Mm. But, yes.
Well, now, Eric, I know you'd probably like Orville Ketchum from the semi-sequels, semi-universe.
I would have to rewatch. I haven't watched them in a while, so...
Yeah. Well, that might be coming up eventually.
Yeah, Slumber Party Massacre 2 starring Shaken Stevens.
Can't wait till we get to Slumber Party Massacre 2. I love that film.
Justin, can I ask you, did you have an issue with what is very obviously the killing of real snails in the movie?
Yes. I mean, it was a bit, you know, there was no point really was there to doing that.
It's a very odd plot point to have this guy going around with a meat cleaver chopping up snails.
Mm. Well, it's
and they talk about it like it's a common thing, because she's like, my dad goes on snail hunts too.
That's escargot, isn't it?
Would they actually have that many snails in California? I don't know if it's a dry state. I don't. Also, I was kind of the thing that struck me was there seemed to be these two houses, the neighboring houses, in isolation on Venice Beach or somewhere in Venice, and no one else heard anything at all. You know, the screams and everything. You know, because the neighboring girls heard the screams, didn't they? And it was pretty loud what was going on, and that nobody else heard anything at all. It was almost like a microcosm of, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's that whole thing about teenage, you know, drama. It's very, not internalized, but it's kind of with teenagers, when you're a teenager, everything is a drama, and teenagers are very egocentric, just like young children are in a lot of ways. And the drama's all about them. And that's the film is very much this kind of microcosm of teenage life, isn't it? With the killer invading it. And there's nothing outside that apart from the pizza delivery guy who doesn't really get much of a part apart from being a seat.
This is kind of I wouldn't call it a segue, but you know, with the climate today, I'm actually kind of surprised they haven't, you know, tried remaking this film because of all the subtext. I mean, with the internet, especially sites like Tumblr being kind of overrun with half feminist and half kind of, I guess you'd call them quote unquote rape apologists, and they're at war with one another. I'm surprised someone hasn't gotten the bright idea to kind of do an internet based Slumber Party Massacre remake.
What I'm surprised at is that they, like you say, they invert some slasher cliches, like the boys aren't effective in any way, but then they show tons and tons of nudie ladies soaping themselves in showers endlessly. You know, if they really were going to invert things, surely they should have shown the boys in the shower soaping themselves.
It's like, I think the script is probably more along the lines of empowering the females, but then, you know, post-production is more like, well, you know, we got to appeal to the denominator here, so let's have these girls soap themselves up. And then I guess, you know, they were just kind of forced into it. Yeah, I guess they
Let's not forget, this is Roger Corman.
Right. Right.
I mean, Roger.
So, I mean,
it's like having two or three different chefs at the table, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, I mean, Roger Corman's infamous, wasn't he? For he was behind Humanoids from the Deep, wasn't he? In the 1980 movie, and also directed by a woman. And he basically kind of insisted, or something. I can't remember exactly how it happened, but a lot more explicit nudity in that, which I think was either reshot by someone else or. It was added, you know, so it doesn't surprise me that he insisted that Amy Jones, who directed this, I think it was Amy Jones, wasn't it, who inserted a load of female nudity.
I like what she did, though, because in a way, it's almost like making the viewer into like a voyeur, almost making the viewer into a creep, kind of like Russ Thorne, because the way she lingers on the women's bodies, and like it's obvious the way she like camera pans up and down each girl's body as it goes down the shower. I mean, it's very like voyeuristic.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's curious. I mean, it's a curiosity, the film, isn't it, in a lot of ways. And I think it was almost like a cinematic Chinese Whispers, wasn't it? That somebody, the script was written one way, and then it was read another, and then filmed in a different way by someone who didn't necessarily get the subtleties or the intent of the parody, but you know, so it's kind of almost like a Chinese Whispers, that by the end time it came out the other end, it was the same but very different from how it was intended.
It's like definitely there's some like diametrically opposed ideas, but somehow they all kind of, you know, coalesce and they all work together, you know, strangely enough, in like this 77-minute runtime.
Well, I think it's the bottom line is that it's, you know, at the end of the day, it works as a slasher movie, doesn't it? Regardless,
and it's never boring. I'll give it, you know, you can definitely give it that.
Yeah, and it just works, isn't it? And I think that's the beauty of it. And there's lots of stuff going on underneath, and you could argue to the cows come home how much what the intent was and all these different things. But it works as an early 80s slasher movie, and you can't really ask for much more. It's got likable characters. It's got, you know, humorous script. You know, fun killings, a bit of suspense. You know, it is a pizza of a slasher movie. It's kind of like I say, it's a fast food slasher, and that's not a bad thing at all.
I think it's kind of fun watching characters do ridiculous things, like when Kim and Trish have barricaded themselves in the bedroom, but yet they leave the window open.
Yeah.
So he can just sneak in behind them, and they purposely leave that open because in the beginning of the scene you see like one of them walking away from the window where it looks like they just went and opened it. Like, why would you do that?
Do you know what the film was that Valerie was watching on TV?
Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, it was Hollywood Boulevard. Okay, I did wonder that, because that's got, I've never seen it, but that's got a slasher movie.
Oh, you should watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, it's one of those movies where the Hollywood Boulevard is mainly about a low budget movie being made, and it's sort of like the slasher part where the deaths are happening around the set. That's kind of a side story amongst like the bigger picture, but the slasher parts are a lot of fun.
Amy Jones actually edited it, which is why it's kind of a self-referential thing.
Right. Okay. Well, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, we always talk about, you know, we talked about this before. Just in the same way as the slasher movie wasn't invented when John Carpenter released Halloween, the spoof or the self-referential or slasher movie didn't start with Scream, either, did it? It was by this point, even because I mean, this film I think was, I'm not sure exactly when it was shot. I couldn't find that information, but I know it was the whole project started in 1981. It was obviously intended as a parody, and of course there were a lot broader parodies of slasher movies, weren't there? Like Wacko and Hysterical and Pandemonium and those kind of films.
Student Bodies,
of course, yes, and probably the most famous one. But they're much broader, more like along the lines of Aeroplane, whereas that this is as subtle as a film with a guy killing teenagers with a drill can be. It's a more subtle like parody of the.
One day we need to cover a parody. I think it'd be kind of fun.
I think it would be really fun, actually. I think it would be really interesting to do Student Bodies or something, or you know, even do a one-off show where we cover, you know, we cover more than one of them. Just as a sort of look at that kind of phenomenon.
Do 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 do.
I knew you do that. right. Well, is there anything else to say before we get onto some feedback?
Did anyone notice that possibly the character of Courtney was based on Inga from Bloody Moon? Because she was kind of moody.
If anyone did, it would be you.
Her sister did tell people that she was beating off boys in the fifth grade. She got a little upset about that. One of my favorite parts in that movie, which it's probably mean to laugh about it, but it's when the little sister is like, "Do you think I'll ever be beautiful?" And Valerie's like, "Turn around, and look at me." And she does. She's like, "No, not a chance."
Well, I'm not surprised that Courtney's kind of bratty and kind of has trouble sleeping and is looking at Playboy with who was in Playboy?
Sylvester Stallone.
After Valerie makes her that drink. To that kind of disgusting kind of Sunny D kind of
Kool-Aid.
It's Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid, yeah. Was it? Okay, but with half a kind of a thing of sugar in it.
Well, somebody points out, I think on the Hochstatter website, that brand of Kool-Aid is sweetened already, so you don't need to put sugar in it. So she's just adding more sugar to a sugary drink.
Yeah.
Just, I think possibly Courtney is the fly.
Eh?
No? The fly? Maybe she's the fly?
Oh, remember? Okay. I get you know, what you're saying now.
Yeah, when Jeff Goldblum turns into the fly and he starts eating lots of sugar.
So it's a bit too esoteric for this time of morning.
I also love the girls listening in on Diane's phone call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. When she says, "Do you think I'm getting better?" Because I mean, that makes me laugh. Because back when, you know, before cell phones and everything, I mean, we played pranks like that. So.
What an asshole.
So, anything? What about backgrounds, Nathan? You know, do you want to regale us with anything? No, have you got anything?
Lord, there's a plethora of information about Slumber Party Massacre. Like in Linda's chase scene at the beginning with Brink Stevens, the room that she hides in. If you look on the door, there's like flyers that say "Join the Drill Team" and "Emergency Drill Instructions."
I don't get it.
Drill.
Eric, surely there must be a jingle for that.
I was being sarcastic, Joseph.
God damn it, Eric.
Eric, you should be offended. Like, Joseph thought you actually were serious.
I know. You think I'm some kind of, like, thicky from the planet Stupid.
Why don't you write a jingle about it?
I am smart. Yes, I am. I am so intelligent. Ooh, ooh.
I thought you were going to go, "I am smart, much smarter than you, Hibbert."
And let's see, when Kim is fighting with Russ Thorne in the bedroom and throwing the little figurines at him, there's a book on the table that you can see, Ruby Fruit Jungle, and that book was written by Rita Mae Brown, who actually wrote this movie. So another little self-referential thing in this film. And I'm sure you guys already know this if you remember the movie Iced, but Deborah DeLisso, who played Kim, and Joe Johnson, who played Neil, also starred in the late 80s slasher movie Iced.
Which Joe Johnson also wrote, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very true. Well, Brink Stevens, and who played Linda, and Robin Steele, I don't know how to say her name, they were in Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bolarama, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Of course it is.
It's just such an amazing film. Carol Frank was assistant director on this film, and she went on to direct Sorority House Massacre, which features girls, you know, trying on Melanie's clothes.
They eat Melanie's ice cream.
Oh, yeah, they eat Melanie's ice cream.
It was Cindy's clothes they try on.
See, we need to cover that at some point. And I can't believe you haven't picked it yet, Eric, because that's got that scene in it you love so much.
Yeah. See, I'm still waiting to find the UK VHS version, which is 10 minutes longer. Because the version I have is not the one I remember watching in my youth.
I've got the UK VHS version.
Yeah, because it has brilliant conversations about hair and stuff in it. Okay. Extended version.
Well, sadly... Robin Steele, who played Valerie, is unfortunately no longer with us. I think the internet basically uncovered that she had unfortunately committed suicide back in the early 90s, which is sad because I thought she, I thought she did a really good job in this movie. I thought she was one of the better actors in the movie, actually. Let's see. The director, Amy Jones, originally filmed a prologue scene, which ran for about 8 minutes to show to Corman. And that's basically what got her the job for directing this film. And when she described it, it was, you know, a group of people in a house. They were sort of like hippies, and they had a Ouija board, and they started getting killed off in the house. And, you know, I mean, I'm disappointed that footage is no longer around, like nobody can find it, because I would love to see that too. But it's some of that lost footage stuff that we love. And the actress that played Jackie, Andre Honor, is the only one that's actually in the movie that's on the poster. Because, you know, if you guys look at the poster, you know, the girls in the poster obviously are not in the movie. Although one of the girls that's in the poster, the one lying on the ground, did go on to be in the fantastic 1982's Trick or Treats.
Well, that's in inverted commas, the fantastic, yeah. I think you mean.
Well, fantastic in a fun way.
Mm. I always thought it was Linnea Quigley on the front of cover, but it's not, is it?
No.
No.
Let's see. Jim Wynorski actually did the photography for the cover art, and he's the one that also went on to do, you know, Hard to Die and Sorority House Massacre 2, and even the, you know, unofficial fourth Slumber Party Massacre movie called Cheerleader Massacre, which actually Brink Stevens reprises her role as Linda in Cheerleader Massacre and reveals that she survived, her attack in the original Slumber Party Massacre.
Didn't he, I saw something, he'd done Sorority House Massacre 3, but he never got released.
Yeah, apparently it was a really troubled production, so much so that the movie turned out really bad and he doesn't ever want it released. Which is kind of unfortunate because, I mean, I don't know, being a completist, even if it is bad, I'd still kind of like to see it. It can't be any worse than some of the other movies we've seen.
Or he's directed.
Let's see. I liked this. I mean, I meant to mention this earlier, but you know, the refrigerator scene. Because I mean, Russ just. I mean, it's kind of odd that he took the time to carry Kim down and put her body in the refrigerator. But when they interviewed the actress Deborah DeLisso about that, you know, she admitted that was one of the more difficult scenes to film because she only had that little light in the refrigerator to hold on to every time the door opened. So, you know, it was a bit of a challenge to deal with that.
I was surprised when I read that bit as well because I was assumed they would use a false fridge for the effect. But no, they used a real fridge.
They used a real fridge.
Because there'd be limited, because there'd be no air in there, would there, after a while? It'd be a limited amount of air.
Yeah,
I mean, you'd have
space.
That probably wouldn't be one of the more fun, you know, things to do. I would like to cover the sequel at some point, because as you guys mentioned, the sequel does carry over the character of Courtney and even Valerie in, like, dream sequences. But, you know, we never know what happened to Trish. She never mentioned again after the original. But let's see, I think that's all the trivia that I have. So, Justin?
Okay. Let me have a look. Let's have a look. It was, there's bits and pieces I picked up. Amy Jones went on to write and direct another Roger Corman film called My Love Letters, which was a art house film. And apparently, I'm not quite sure why or how this came about, but apparently Roger Corman, after watching Slumber Party Massacre, said to Amy Jones, "I want you to direct an art house movie for me."
So I don't know if it's art house. It has Jamie Lee Curtis in it and Stacey Keach.
Okay, well maybe it's not art
but
house.
But I don't think it's art house.
Well, it says
it's romantic.
Well, it just said I got from Variety on April 29th, 1983, and it says. It says here, blah, 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 Filmix notes, as we sat in the dub for Slumber Party Massacre, Roger said, "Amy, I'd like you to direct an art film." Yeah, I don't know. So maybe it started as an art, maybe as Slumber Party Massacre started as a parody. Maybe Love Letters started as an art house film and became a Jamie Lee Curtis, Stacey Keach vehicle, perhaps. The film had a number of different titles. It was called Sleepless Nights, which was the title it was written under as a parody. But I think it was filmed as Don't Open the Door before it became Slumber Party Massacre. So in the copyright database, it has it down as it applied for copyright and under the title Don't Open the Door in 1981. So there was that. The entire score was done on a Casio synthesizer.
Eric. Much like this.
Indeed. The last thing I'll say, because I'm sure I'll leave it for some for Joseph and Eric if you've got anything extra, but the guy who played the pizza boy was called Aaron Lipstadt, if that's how you pronounce the name, who went on to direct Android in 1982, which is also produced by Roger Corman, so very much a family affair. So that's
just to correct one thing, the love letters is James Keach, not Stacey.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Because James is the more hunky version of the Keach family.
That's debatable.
I don't think Jamie Lee would want to be, you know, rolling in the hay with Stacey.
Well, mind you, she goes rolling in the hay with what's his name in the fog.
I inadvertently put that into your head, Justin.
Pardon?
Never mind. I'm not going to say any more.
Well, we haven't had. Hold on. He inadvertently put it into his head.
Oh, no, I wouldn't dream of letting a lady anywhere near my marbles. Now, haven't you got a strong, capable young man?
So, anyway, we haven't had one of those for a little while. Who's going next?
Oh, you go. Were,
Derek. When, okay. Oh, no, go on.
All right, who's going, me or Eric?
No, you go.
You've mostly rolled through everything I have, but basically...
No, I was talking to Hugo.
Hugo? Sorry. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's not even my joke of the week.
Oh god.
I can't wait to hear that. Anyway, Michael Vallela deliberately avoided talking to the other cast members during the shooting of the picture, I guess to kind of give him that whole creep joie de vivre, I guess. He also originally read for the role of the neighbor David Content, I think his name was.
Yeah.
Again, on Michael Vallela, he read the book Helter Skelter in order to research the role of Russ Thorne. And then finally, he apparently based his physical body movements on the peacock, which I guess is kind of interesting. The big conclusion in the backyard with the swimming pool was added to the movie in a reshoot or a post-production. And you've pretty much ran through everything else. I got a little anecdote. Back in like 89 or 90, my older brother and I used to kind of, you know, scour video stores to, you know, rent these, you know, slasher films. But basically, I would also go in there and try to, you know, talk them out of like giving away their posters. And a lot of these places, they just rotate their posters. Like if you wrote your name on the back, at the top, whoever was at the top would get the poster. So I'd make sure I was, you know, writing my name first before anyone else. And I actually wrote my name on the back of a Slumber Party Massacre poster. So I remember getting that and being really excited about that. Unfortunately, I lost that poster and many others in a flood when the flood hit our garage and ruined so many posters I got from video stores, this one included. But that's all the background I have.
Okay, well, okay. Thank you, Joseph. Eric, have you got anything left for us?
I do. Background. It's the stuff that happens behind the scenes that might not be obvious much in the film. Okay.
I can see this is going to be a segment. This is going to be an ongoing segment.
Yes. Amy Holden-Jones actually started off when she was studying at MIT. She was a documentary maker, and she won an award which was judged by Martin Scorsese, and as a result got invited on to work on Taxi Driver. And Scorsese, of course, had been a protege of Roger Corman, hence the connection with Corman, and that's how she ended up editing the Joe Dante movie Hollywood Boulevard. I read slightly differently than you, Justin, that the script was originally called Don't Open the Door, and it was filmed under the title Sleepless Nights. This is what they say on the commentary track. I think they always intended to call it Slumber Party Massacre, but they shot under the title Sleepless Nights so that they could get locations to make it sound a bit more classy, because nobody would want to rent out their house to somebody making a film called Slumber Party Massacre. That was their thinking. Amy Holden-Jones at the time was offered the chance to edit E.T. because she was building up quite a head of steam as this very reliable and talented editor, but she turned it down to direct Slumber Party Massacre. And I don't know if that was a good or a bad move on her part. For us, from our point of view, it was a good move. Gina Smika Hunter, who plays Diane, did you know this? This will be a shock to everyone, I think. She played Phoebe in Friends. Did anyone know that? I'm referring to a 1979 TV series called Friends, and in one episode she played a character called Phoebe. So there we go. The things you find on the internet.
What did you say her name was?
Gina Smika Hunter, is it? She plays Diane, the bitchy character.
Kind of like Regina Phalange.
Kind of like Regina Phalange.
That's kind of eerie, actually.
Yeah. Actually, that series also starred Penelope Sudro, who was in Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and famously got her head stuck in a television.
Sudro, Kudro?
Oh my God, the
just gets the coincidences.
Yeah.
Scary. It's scary.
It is scary. Yeah. Apparently, there was a scene where, speaking of scary, where the girls were playing with a Ouija board. I know you alluded to this, Nathan, that was shot as part of the prologue, but it was actually shot as part of Slumber Party Massacre as well, but it was removed. Apparently, they were playing with a Ouija board and it spells out the word death. The score that's done on the Casio keyboard was by Amy Jones' brother, Ralph Jones, who also provided the music for her follow-up film, Love Letters. Incidentally, I was just going to ask you... Justin, did you know the Kimberly Beck connection to Amy Jones? Because she did the, she was part of our intro to the podcast. No,
No.
I just wondered if it was deliberate. No, Amy Jones' film after Love Letters was a film called Made to Order, which starred Ali Sheedy, and her best friend in the film is played by Kimberly Beck. So,
oh, I love Made to Order.
Yeah. Let's see, what else do I have here? Okay, there's as we were mentioning, the girls are playing basketball at the start and the guys are watching from the sidelines. Now, there's three guys watching. Two of them are the characters of Neil and I can't remember the other guy's name, but there's one extra standing beside them in purple who was a friend of Joe Johnson's, and apparently he is now a transsexual called Debbie. There you go. These are the things you learn from the audio commentary. Did anyone else notice that there was a picture of a unicorn beside Valerie's bed, and the unicorn's horn looked like a drill bit?
I'm sure that was intentional.
I'm sure it probably was, because there's lots of other things. Joe Johnson, as you said, went on to write and star in Iced with Deborah DeLisa, but he also went on to appear in some European horror films, most notably Fulci's Ghosts of Sodom, which was a 1988 one, I think, when he was well past his prime, and Umberto Lenzi's House of Lost Souls. And that's about it. Oh, yeah, as you say, it was released over here as Slumber Party Murders in May of 1986, but it was cut by 30 seconds. But it did go out uncut in the cinemas in when it was certified in February of 1983. And Justin, there is a UK quad poster out there to prove that it did go out in cinemas over here.
I've got it, yeah. Mm. Mm. Yeah, it did. I'm not sure. I've got it right next to me, actually. Let's see if I can see it. But I can't remember. Yeah, it's here somewhere. It's flicking through my posters. Well, thank you. That's a lot of background, isn't it? So that's good.
It's a lot more than I thought we'd have, actually.
Yeah, excellent.
You know, Valerie and Courtney's last name in this movie is Bates. I wonder if that's a Norman Bates.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you're right.
Actually, on the Scream Factory Blu-ray, which is fantastic, there's an interview with the guy who plays Mr. Content on it. Now, he talks, for the first 5 minutes or so, he talks about his career in acting and that. And then for the last 5 minutes, he goes into some kind of performance art where he's reciting a poem and doing all kinds of weird gesticulations. And it's quite scary, to be honest, because he looks like a complete lunatic.
Oh, wow.
What, so he doesn't actually talk about the film at all?
No. He talks about how he got into acting, blah, blah, blah. And then he starts reciting this poetry he's written. Oh. And he does sound effects and gesticulates. It's weird. Yeah, a bit like me.
Gesticulate wildly.
Yeah.
Well, that's very curious. Oh,
it's back.
The cheeks are back.
And just that gesticulating.
That wasn't your organ, was it, this time?
It was a different kind. Right, now I am thinking about another kind of organ.
Right. Go to the tiny orphans who need you.
So, okay, do we got anything else before we move on the Slum Party Massacre, or are we?
We got a bunch of listener feedback for Slum Party Massacre.
We have. Well, how about before we get to that? How about you know what? You know what?
I do know what.
It's my joke of the week. It's so funny.
Why was the lead actress in Slumber Party Massacre eventually arrested after receiving several warnings? Because she was Robin Still.
That was very good, Eric.
Thank you.
I liked
very
it.
Much.
I couldn't even put sobbing underneath that one, so that shows how. That was very well thought out.
Thank you.
You should do stand-up.
I think I should. In fact, there's a big comedy festival happening in Dublin next weekend. I think I'll gatecrash it.
You should. Yeah. I think, well, you've got a wealth of... you've got all these jokes. You could say them one by one, couldn't you?
I'm in the mood for a standing ovation and, you know, applause and flowers being thrown onto the stage. I'm really in the mood for that, so I might do that next week.
Yeah, well, you can dream. It's always good to dream, isn't it?
I'm sure Toy will be there.
No, Toy's a serious artist. She wouldn't be seen at a comedy festival. She's too busy doing main stages and stadiums and stuff.
80s revival shows.
Yeah, there's still a lot of people go to them.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying. I was saying that I think somebody, Stuart's family, were at an 80s show where there was like Midgeur and Kim Wilde and various people like that playing. I don't know if Toya was. I think she does do those, doesn't she?
She does, yeah.
Yeah.
Because she's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everyone needs to pay bills, don't they? So shall we move on to feedback?
Yes.
Well, how about, let's actually, before we do that, this is how to contact the show.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Right, welcome back. And we are joined by Katz. You can hear. That's Sargento being relatively well behaved at the moment. But well, apart from he's just got my headphones. No, Argento, come on. No, that's naughty. Stop it. No. Oi. Hold on. Stop it. Stop it.
He's a cat. Meow. Eating his headphones. He's a cat. Meow.
I'm just going to have to put now. All right. Okay. I think we're okay. You can't see what I can see. It's quite scary. But, okay. We have got quite a lot of feedback this time, which is always good, so thank you very much. But to keep on the Slumber Party Massacre groove, Joseph, you're going to read back some of the things from the Facebook group.
Yes, and by the next episode, I'm going to record a jingle for our new segment, which is Listener Movie Feedback.
Hey,
I'll come up with something clever and use my best
like what singing. I've been doing.
Yeah, and use my best singing voice.
Like I've been doing.
Yes. Like Justin's been doing. Anyway, let's see.
Yes.
To start, this is from Bill Hollister, and he says, "I've always loved the Slumber Party Massacre, and I'm glad you gents are finally covering it. I remember renting this as a kid in the late 80s and being drawn to it instantly. It is a rarity in the world of slasher movies that this was written and directed by women. The score is disturbing and really creates a sense of unease throughout the movie. The actor who plays Russ Thorne looks like an actual serial killer and is menacing. For the fans of female nudity, it is hard to top this film. A question for the group and for listeners. Do girls actually share soap in the shower like this? It all seems a bit unsanitary. Anyway, for a movie directed by a woman, there are certainly plenty of leering shots on the girls in various states of undress. I've always loved the chase scene in the school between Russ and Brink Stevens' character, although it is odd that her death was off-screen. The film is 74 minutes, and the brevity works to its advantage. There are many great scenes with Russ Thorne hiding under the blanket in the living room, being the most memorable to me. My only complaint with the Slumber Party Massacre is this. Would teenage girls really be this concerned and fascinated by a baseball game score? The characters are likable for the most part, in particular Valerie, even if she drinks too much milk, and her sister Courtney. While it is not one of the top-tier slasher movies of the early 80s, The Slumber Party Massacre never fails to hold my attention. Now I'm off to find a banana and the latest issue of Playgirl. All the best to my favorite podcast. That was from Bill Hollister.
Well, thank you, Bill.
And we got one from Steph Rivers, who says, "Ah, I can't wait for this episode. Slumber Party Massacre and Slumber Party Massacre 2 are among my all-time faves."
Excellent. Thank you, Steph.
And this is from Ara Alishan. He says, "Where to start? This is one of my personal favorite slashers, and I sincerely enjoy every single moment of it. I don't want to ramble on too much, but I will say kudos to Amy Holden-Jones and everyone involved with the production. Do you guys know the connection between Slumber Party Massacre and Cheerleader Camp? I don't, but I'm sure the four of you will come up with something, and we did not. I absolutely love this movie, and I'm excitedly looking forward to the next episode."
Excellent. Well, thank you very much again.
And our good buddy Kieran with the golden voice replied to Aura's comment and says what Aura said. Also, I'm looking forward to your new segment on the podcast, 6 Degrees of Cheerleader Camp. It's a good idea, actually. Stephen Petek, I guess that's how you pronounce his name. Hope I got that right. Says, I enjoyed the original Slumber Party Massacre when I first saw it on VHS back in 1984. But over the years, I've come to regard this Halloween knockoff as something of a classic. The killer is fun to watch. His weapon of choice is over the top, but perfect for a film like this. The cast is fun, the nudity and gore are just the right amount of sleaze. And then there's that chase sequence with Brink Stevens. Simply awesome. That was from Stephen Petek.
Thank you, Stephen. Okay, it was a lot of love out there for the Slumber Party Massacre.
Yeah, a lot of love. A few more. This is from Miles Hamer. He says, I like the bit with the massacre at the Slumber Party. Nice slice of pizza action, too. 8 out of 10.
That was my favorite bit, too.
Tom Virtuoso writes, Brown Note soundtrack, Speedo shirt drill, between the legs POV, and eating a dead man's pizza. I love that clips from this are featured as flashbacks in Sorority House Massacre 2 and 3, Hard to Die, as slightly different stories by Orville Ketchum, B-horror's most hilarious, buttery protagonist. It's from Tom Virtuoso.
I'm sure it'll be interesting when we get onto Orville Ketchum later.
Yes.
Was it Eric? Was he one of your... Is he a dreamboat for you?
I don't know. I can't remember what he looks like.
No.
Let me give him a ruddy good Googling here.
Yeah, give him... I expect he'd be right up your alley.
This is from Mikey Faulkner, who says, watching it right now, haters drink too much milk.
Excellent.
Andrew Huff has a really long one. He says, I really enjoy this.
Andrew, we'd be delighted to hear that, but that compliment.
Yeah. He says he really enjoys this one. Anyway. Matt Mentir. Looking forward to this one. Thank you, Matt. Sam Hain writes, I seem to remember it being short, sharp, and to the point. And he is correct. Finally, Andrew Rooney says, I remember Alan Dale from Neighbors having a cameo in this. If you look very closely and do a lot of pausing during the shower scene, I'm sure he has his tits out in the background. That's from Andrew Rooney.
Are his tits getting bigger in it?
Maybe. Mine?
Mine?
Eric, I thought one scene kind of reminded me of you. It was when Diane was talking about Valerie, and she said something like, she works at it. Do you ever notice how perfect her eyeliner is? And I was thinking about you saying that to Justin, because, you know, I imagine he would have wore a lot of eyeliner in his goth days.
True.
One more what? Just come in from Bill Ackerman.
Okay.
He says, breaking. When I first... Oh, what's
breaking,
that?
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Yeah, breaking news.
Yeah.
He says, Bill Ackerman says, when I first heard of the Slumber Party Massacre, the fact that it was written by feminists as a parody of the genre was seemingly the most famous thing about it. A professor even screened it for film students when I was going to school in upstate New York, though I still have a hard time seeing it as a subversive work, as you know and will probably discuss on the show. It was filmed as a straight horror movie, and only a couple of gags, like the castrating of that phallic drill, clearly betray the original satiric origins. But does anyone ever think of it as a parody along the lines of Evil Laugh or Wes Craven's Scream? We talked about that a little bit. Does anyone ever notice all of the naked actresses? We talked about that a little bit. And think that it's making a comment on the use of nudity in slasher films? We did talk about that a little bit. I like the film as a better than average early 80s slasher, but it's always the weird intentions versus execution quality that makes this film distinct from its peers for me.
Well, thank you, Bill.
That's a lot of feedback from listeners. I think this is a kind of a... it's a success, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, I expect we probably won't have as much feedback for the next choice. An inkling. But we'll come on to that a little bit later. But yeah, no, thank you, Bill, and everyone who fed back on that. We'll give you a chance, tell you at the end of the show what the film we're going to be recording next time is. We've already chosen that, another listener pick, and give you a chance to top your tuppence, as it were. So, but yeah, so it's interactive. Bill Ackerman just contacted me on Facebook and said, am I too late? And I said, we're recording right now. So this is all happening. It's breaking news, even though this is going out in a week's time. So it'll be a bit stale by that point. But anyway, more feedback. Who's got some? Nathan,
I do.
You got anything? Okay.
Yeah. It says, hi, guys. Thought it was about time I wrote in again. And as before, awesome job. Keep it up. The wait in between Terror Train and Alien was excruciating. Please don't leave it so long again. On the plus side, I found myself revisiting all the old episodes from Happy Birthday to Me up until My Bloody Valentine. How you've all grown. Cracking stuff, though. As I mentioned before, I have the podcast playing throughout the kitchen at work while I'm prepping my functions. Not sure everyone appreciates the witty banter, but it's my kitchen. Is somebody moving around?
I accuse Joseph.
I accuse Joseph. It wasn't me.
Okay.
Or Argento.
Okay, well, getting back to it. Okay. As I mentioned before, I have the podcast playing throughout the kitchen at work while I'm prepping my functions. Not sure everyone appreciates the witty banter, but it's my kitchen, my rules. And it's either that or listen to my manager jabber on about his cats. Hey, that's what I've got you guys for. I'm currently in the middle of Hellbound Hellraiser 2 after finishing the first one. Just doing my homework, as tomorrow afternoon I'm off the local art house cinema for a showing of Leviathan, The Making of Hellraiser 1 and 2. Very excited. Talking of film marathons, just before Christmas I had a free house and managed to watch Friday the 13th parts 1 through 10. Wow. One after the other. A couple of friends, non-horror fans, made it through 1 and 2, but made their excuses and left before Jason even donned the famous hockey mask. I persevered until the afternoon of the following day. Coffee was my friend for most of it all, but I had a blast. Just wondered if any of you have attempted any similar film marathons of your own. And lastly, my recently seen Hellraiser 1 and 2, Disco Path, Open Grave, Cold Prey 1 and 2, The Babadook, Night of the Demon from 1980, Chopping Mall, The Lost Coast Tapes, Mama, Session 9, The Conjuring, Texas Chainsaw, The Next Generation, Night Screams, and Killer Clowns from Outer Space, to name a few. On my birthday, I persuaded my wife to watch The Miami Connection and Samurai Cop. Not horror films, but so cheesy. They're beyond incredible. Both trailers can be found on YouTube and... Let's see. Wait a minute. Both trailers can be found on YouTube and will sell it to you instantly. I guess these are maybe available to purchase on YouTube? I think that's about it. Sorry if I've rambled. That'll be the vodka. Much love, Nick Yemens.
Well, thank you, Nick.
As an addendum, Nick wrote in again and said... Leviathan, The Making of Hellraiser 1 and 2. Doe, I fell asleep 75% of the way in. Too many beers. Nick Yeomans.
Well, I'm not surprised. I have Leviathan on DVD, and it runs for about 8 hours.
Really?
My goodness. It's spread over two discs.
Right.
So I'm curious to know what they were thinking putting it on in the cinema, because I don't think it would... It's not a very cinematic piece of work, to be honest.
That's some butt-numbing...
Yes.
Dedication right there.
So to answer his question, do you guys ever have horror movie marathons?
Not of the same type of movie. I have been to horror film festivals where I've sat and watched 6 or 7 movies in a day, but they'd all be different. But I don't think I could watch all 10 Friday the 13th in one go.
I don't know if I could either. I could watch maybe like the first 5, maybe, or first 4, or something like that.
When we were at Monster Mania, didn't we watch like 6, 7, and 8 back to back? Or I can't remember.
Yeah, they had screenings.
Yeah.
That was the fun time when the guy dressed as Jason came in and sat down, and every time a killing happened, he would kind of like raise his machete like he was cheering for himself. That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. The same for me. We have double bills and things like that on the kitchen big screen, I think I've spoken about it before, the like Shock Around the Clock, which is like a all night 24-hour movie marathon at the Scala in London, King's Cross, which is, I don't think it's going anymore, but that was back in 1990, 1989, so a long time ago. But yeah, that was quite tough going when you got to about 5 in the morning. That was always quite a challenge to stay awake.
Mm.
I will say that out of the movies he listed that he had seen recently, the best one, in my opinion, is Texas Chainsaw The Next Generation.
Is it really?
That is one of my favorite movies.
Right.
I just think it's so entertaining. It's never boring, and it's just so much fun.
Sorry. I'd have to... Argento nearly... No, no, go on. No, oi, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. No.
You sound like, what's his face at the end of Halloween 3? Season of the Witch. Stop it. Stop, stop it.
I know. Well, it's an interactive podcast, but, okay, well, who would like to go next? Eric, would you like to go
next? Yes. I have some feedback ready for you to hear now. This is from, scroll down, Andrew Rooney from Auckland, New Zealand. He says, I've got a bone, matron, to pick with you, Justin. A few episodes back, you got a message from a fellow Kiwi, and you were delighted to have your first New Zealander writing in. I've been writing in for ages and always mention I'm a Kiwi. Anyway, I had an Inga moment and got very upset. So I think you should apologise to him.
I do apologise, Andrew. I'm very sorry, but it was a gin.
Yeah. I'm so glad there's talk of introducing Ben Schur into an episode. He offers penetrating matron insights and is a fabulous rager, so he'll fit right in. Slumber Party Massacre is the perfect episode to bring him in on. Well, it's a bit late now. I can imagine him delighting in the girls' antics, including the tremendous band rehearsal, pillow fight, and interesting eating habits, which I think is part two, is it not?
Yes.
Also, have to love the 30-year-old schoolgirl being left alone for the weekend, the subtle as a sledgehammer newspaper headline, and the multiple red herrings. The snail gun massacre scene is right up there as one of the funniest red herrings of all time. I remember being so confused and intrigued by how silly it all was, that I did some research. From memory, the writer or director was a feminist activist, which made me watch the film in a different light again. Attack female exploitation in slasher films by making an exploitation slasher film? I call bullshit. Also, if I'm not mistaken, the final girl committed suicide relatively young, which we've mentioned already. The last piece of trivia I donate to either Nathan or Joseph, whose background information is always sadly lacking.
Controversial.
You both had a lot of information this week, yes. Part two is essential viewing also, criminally underseen and more bonkers than the first film. As a double bill, it's about as much fun as running around graveyards at midnight naked screaming Susie songs. Well, I assume it's fun, Justin. Is it?
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, thought you'd like that. Can't leave without requesting the cat flushing the toilet song. And is the mutilator on the horizon? Alien, predator, but no mutilator. You guys are breaking my heart. And that's from Andrew Rooney in Auckland in New Zealand, who was the first Kiwi to get in touch with us.
Yes, and to make up, Andrew, that was Eric's love beads going off. Yeah. But also... So yay. There you go. Just like old times.
Yes. Part two is fun. I know I reviewed part two quite early on in my Hysteria Lives career and gave it quite a harsh review. But the passage of time has made me see the error of my ways.
Mm. We'll have to pick it. I think it'd be a fun one to cover.
Well, it's got Heidi Kozak in it, who I love.
Yes.
What are you laughing?
Well, no, so the way you said, I love the image.
I do, because she's brilliant. She's the ditzy blonde.
Mm. Did you like her in Society, Eric?
Yes.
I love the fact that in Society, I'm sorry to digress here, but when her boyfriend is trying to tell her all this horrible stuff's happening and she's upset that they're not being invited to the rich guy's party. That's more important.
She essentially plays the same ditzy blonde in every movie.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of the moment when Justin was talking about, I think it was the MTV slasher film, My Super Psycho Sweet 16, or it may have been the April Fool's Day remake, I don't remember, but he's talking about how all this killing's going on, and the girl, all she could say is, "You ruined my debutante coming out ball."
Priorities.
Yeah. Indeed. We all have them, so... shall I go next? I've got a rather lengthy one here. says, "Hi guys, first off, I want to thank Nathan very much for picking Slumber Party Massacre to be covered. I seriously thought about choosing it when making my gory graduation pledge." So there you go. But kept getting a feeling Nathan was going to pick it sooner rather than later. Usually when you watch a movie too much, the shine wears off. But Slumber Party Massacre is a movie I can watch as often as 2 or 3 times a day and love it more with each viewing. That's quite excessive for me, but each to their own. It has everything a slasher fanatic could ever want, and the power drill is such an underrated weapon. The soundtrack is something I cannot leave off a playlist, but to me, Valerie and Courtney are the heart and soul of the movie. They are my two favourite final girls of all time. I think they are some of the best examples of how the slasher flicks from that era have characters you really care about compared to the vast majority of the past decade. Jeff and Neil also have a good case. The wit that is displayed in some of Valerie and Courtney's dialogue never gets old, like Courtney doing her biology homework. Well, I think I'm about to go watch it again, although I should be studying for my finals. I look forward to hearing the episode when it's uploaded in a few days. Peace out. Tristan, that's from Tristan Coma. And also, PS, don't forget to tell Eric to shut up and drink his Kool-Aid when he starts misbehaving.
So, well, you can't get Kool-Aid this side of the Atlantic, so I'm sorry.
We can still tell you to shut up.
You do quite often.
I do not. When have I told you to shut up?
Vile excrement.
Pardon?
Kool-Aid, vile excrement.
What is it? Yes, is it just vile.
It's just like a
drink?
Package of like granulated, just sugary powder that you mix with water, and it's like.
Did sales not plummet after the Jim Jones thing?
Yeah, it's cherry, grape, strawberry, all kinds of watermelon. It's just it's awful. It's just
I like it.
It sounds delicious,
but it's to me it's too sweet. Like I like. The flavored water is better. Like if you just got grape flavored water, I like that better than the Kool-Aid, I guess.
I have one bit of background information I forgot to mention, and that is that on the yeah, I know. Get over it. On the audio commentary track, Amy Jones mentions that Robin Still was apparently, there was rumors that she was dating Sylvester Stallone in the late 80s, which would tie in quite nicely to her Playgirl magazine.
Yeah.
Well, there was a picture of them together. I saw it online at one time.
Oh.
It was like at a party, and it was her and Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, well, there you go. Celebrity gossip.
And did you know that Sylvester Stallone was in a slasher movie?
Cheerleader Camp.
Cobra.
Detox.
No, yeah, Detox. He was actually in a slasher movie.
But Cobra was a kind of slasher-esque as well, wasn't it?
No, that's more of an action movie, I would have said. Like,
it has a few elements, but it's mostly action. Mm. I think I'll pick it.
You're the disease and I'm the cure.
Well, do you guys consider something like, say, 10 to Midnight a slasher movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
You can see a man's bottom in that film.
You reviewed that on the Hysteria Lives, didn't you?
Yes. No, I think it's definitely a slasher movie, isn't it? Well, definitely got, yeah, no, it's a slasher movie kind of plot kind of added onto a kind of right-wing sort of vigilante Charles Bronson movie.
And nudiness in it as well.
Yes, Eric. But I do like the... we talked about that before, but the TV version, he's got pants on.
Oh.
I know.
How do they put pants on him on the TV version?
Digital pants on him?
No, I assume they shot two versions, like a movie and a TV. They used to do that a lot in European films.
Yeah, the clothed and unclothed version. Yeah.
That's kind of funny.
It's like thinking ahead, because they knew their film would never get on TV otherwise. So.
I just think it's kind of funny because for a second, I guess it's too early in the morning, I actually did believe they somehow put digital pants on this guy for the TV version.
They could now, but back then, I doubt it.
Yeah. Were they at least like stylish blocks. Pants? Dolce & Gabbana.
So, are we? Is that it? Have we got anything else? Any more feedback?
I think we've drilled it all.
Wow.
Wait a minute. What do you guys think of the drill as a murder weapon?
Excellent.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's kind of the obviously the other driller killer was been out by that point, hadn't it? But it was very much an oversized drill, wasn't it? It was very much a kind of like a
industrial kind of drill.
Yeah,
I think it's got a great, you know, visual aesthetic, but you know, it's kind of impractical because it's kind of large. It's pretty easy to avoid because it's heavy. I'm sure you couldn't, you know, just swing it, you know, wildly as they portray in the movie.
Right. Oh, and did you guys think that Russ Thorne was impotent, and that the drill like was sort of his way of making up for that,
like a middle-aged man buying a sports car?
Yeah, we discussed that earlier.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if we discussed the impotency, did we? I know we said the drill was like a phallic symbol, but
I did. Well, I said when he got, you know, basically that was his.
Well, I mean, I know, like, yeah, he kind of got castrated, but I'm like, I'm wondering if that was to compensate for a small one, or if that was more like he, you know, could not perform.
Interesting.
Well, he'd been in prison since 1969, didn't he?
He has a thorn for a dick.
Groan. I think that's the right time to leave this podcast.
I think it probably is. Yes. So, well, let's talk about what we're recording next time. We are, coincidentally, we already decided on this this title, and it was my choice. And this is before Screen Factory announced they're going to be releasing a brand new super duper version of this film, which is an early 70s proto slasher, which is Blood and Lace, which is not to be confused with Blood and Black Lace, which the Mario Bava seminal show.
Not to be confused with Black Lace, who sang Agadoo.
No, exactly. Equally, it shouldn't be confused. Nothing should ever be confused with Black Lace. Although maybe we can have a little sound clip of that, because you probably didn't get Black Lace in the States, did you?
Did you just say saying Xanadu?
No, Agadoo.
Agadoo.
Oh.
Agadoo.
Do, 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 do.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Apple, shake the tree. Shake the tree. You know that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that one.
Okay. So you did get our pain over there as well. But, so anyway, we're going to be covering Blood and Lace next time. So we'll put up something on Facebook for you to... Argento. No, go on, get down.
I should say that also is a listener pick from Kieran Edwards. He will be joining us on that episode.
Yes, super early for Kieran.
So his voice will be even deeper.
Hey, guys, I just woke up.
That sounds like the Howard the Duck, the Dark Overlord.
If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen.
So, and also we're going to be recording a couple more commentaries coming up. Can we announce what we're recording, at least one of them?
We did a commentary for Nailgun Massacre, which we've announced that on the last episode, I believe.
Yes, and I think we've plumbed the depths that even more. We've actually I think we outdid ourselves on that commentary. So
let's say we all learned about a certain sexual practice that three of us had never heard of before.
So whether
or not that's going to be released, we're still kind of waiting in the wings on that one. But
if it was too out there, then we will release it separately as a bonus track for you to download and listen to for free. But hopefully it's going to be on the 88th release of Nailgun Massacre, which should be coming up.
We have another one from 88, but I don't think we're allowed to say what that is yet, are we?
No. Well, we're going to wait and see if that one happens, if we have time to do it. But also, are we able to say the other?
The Vinegar Syndrome?
Yes, we will be recording commentary for Vinegar Syndrome for Frightmare, a.k.a. the Horror Star.
Yeah, so that should be a fun one to do. So those will be upcoming, but we'll be back in a couple of weeks, hopefully, with Blood and Lace. So thank you for listening. And what are we playing out with, Joseph?
It's just the incidental synthesizer credit score music. Now, Eric, is that pre-programmed or are you actually playing?
No, it's a keyboard on the iPad, and I just play the buttons, press the buttons. Oh, okay.
You could do, you could score a slasher movie, Eric, couldn't you? Or maybe not.
Yeah.
Is that Toya?
It's almost as good as, that's such a compliment. I'm just so honored.
Well, that's
I don't know what to say.
Oh, Eric.
Compared to Toya. Oh.
Oh, baby. Feels so good.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, I think we've just bid you a fond adieu.
Fondue.
And, well, very appropriate for the show. So, see you next time on The Hysteria Continues. So, yeah, do drop us a line, get some feedback. We'll read it out. And if they want to send in feedback, then write something on the wall on The Hysteria Continues on the thread for Blood and Lace. And we'll talk about that next time. And so if you want to play along, watch the film. And, yeah, okay. We'll say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye, good people, yeah.
I love you.
Are your tits getting bigger?
Mine?
Hey, maybe next time we can record at 3 a.m.
I have to say that was one of the most satisfying wee-wees.
And so then I told him, yeah, but Eric is not into rakes like that.
I'm so not into rakes like that.
Yeah. My cats aren't around me right now.
Oh, I bet someone's about to chew through Justin's headphones.
Yep.
What's he doing?
Did you just call him a hamburger?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was lying down across my lap during the whole commentary.
Nobody puts puppy in a corner. But anyway, I'm sure we'll
see. Justin, where's the tofu?
Yeah, you could get one of those. Get one of those kind of those sound alarms that, you know, the women have that play their high pitched sound of Toya.
Oh baby, the hysteria continues. Ooh 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 ooh, yeah yeah. It's their new jingle I'm writing.
Is it?
Oh ooh, yeah. All right, oh baby.
It's very good. Is that? Have you got? Thanks. Is that your big organ in the background?
That's my big organ. Yeah.